On this week's episode of Marketing O'Clock.
Things aren't A-okay for Google over at the DOJ, and we break it all down.
It's my first party, and I'll cry if I want to, but I don't think I will, because Google Ads has a new tool. The beta is over. Google is supplying all advertisers with demand gen campaigns.
All on today's show.
Welcome, you are listening to Marketing O'Clock. Just stay tuned. Digital marketing news, but let's get specific. Digital ads, SEO and analytics, social media and more. Pretty much everything that'll make your website perform. With new shows every Friday. We give you the news with sass and puns and definitely hot takes. Thank you for tuning in. You know what time it is. It's officially Marketing O'Clock. Settle in, sit back, keep it locked.
Hey there, I'm Christine Zernhelm.
AKA Shep.
I'm Jess Budd.
And I'm Greg Finn.
And it is officially Marketing O'Clock. Here on Friday the 13th. Ooh. October 13th, 2023.
All right, and before we get into it this week, just wanted to say we are all thinking of everyone over in Israel right now. I know we've got a bunch of friends, sponsors, a lot of the Wix team, Wix.com is over there checking in, making sure people are okay. Obviously, we've seen some of the worst of humanity here with some of the things that have been shared and just thoughts, prayers, everything heading out to everybody over there, and hope everybody's well, safe and sound, and that this comes to a pass or an end, peaceful end, as soon as possible here. So thoughts are with y'all. Hope y'all are safe. And I guess on a little bit more positive news, this is our 300th episode, which is pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. We've been doing the show unbroken.
Well, you too.
Every week for 5.8 years.
It's been that long.
5.8
I didn't do
years.
The math.
We have not taken a week off in 5.8 years, which is pretty crazy.
Some of us have, but the show has not.
Greg really barely has, Greg. Yeah. Congratulations.
I've taken like 2 vacations.
But thank you all to our listeners. We couldn't do it without you. Like, people say, well, how has the show become a success? Or how did you get some moderate following? And it's pretty simple. You
moderate.
Just put in work, and overnight, 5.8 years later, you have some listeners. So big thank you to everybody who's listened to us throughout. Couldn't do it without you. What's happening with you, Shep?
I just want to give a warning to all the PPCers out there. Make sure you're doing your stretches. Make sure you're in a safe work environment. I, last week, PMAX'd too close to the sun and critically injured my neck.
What?
Critically is quite an adjective.
What does critically mean? It doesn't mean like dead. I think
pretty
it's
close.
Appropriate.
It's a critical pretty care. Close. You're in the critical yeah. unit.
Well, it seriously impacted my life. So I had like an hour to knock out a bunch of PMAX campaigns. I'm on my laptop because I'm working from home, and I'm just like not blinking for like probably 50 minutes. All of a sudden, I take a breath and I realize that I like cannot move my neck. And it's been a week now, and it's still not that much better. So
wow.
I need everyone to just be really careful. Just don't PMAX too hard. Make sure you're stretching.
If it's too much to bear with, you can come to my house for a s'more.
What?
I told my son last week that I was going to make some killer s'mores, and his reply to me was, ooh, they're going to kill me. Oh my so God. If you can't bear your neck injury, I'll feed you.
That
Thank
is
you.
Your son.
To a T.
And for me, I coach a bunch of teams, so I'm not going to out what team this is. I coach soccer, I coach baseball, all that stuff. But I am out there mixing it up with the kids. Like, I'm running, I'm sprinting, I'm in there tagging them out, you know, cutting them up on
Sounds
the field.
Sounds pretty close to PMAX.
yeah, totally. But one player, and I'd already been there like warming up for like a half hour. And they go, why are you breathing so hard? And I'm like,
the kid said this.
Yeah, the kid said this. And I go, because I'm old. And so I'm like, this kid is on my S list, right? Like, and they look at me and go, you're not old. You look like you're 20.
Wow. Whoa.
Which, to be fair, is very old for a child.
And I said, thank
you. But he said, you're not old.
You're starting. But it's just like, I went from like the bottom of the barrel low to breathing hard to being like, oh, I just shaved off 21 years.
Amazing. But did he call you skinny? Because we know that would not be good.
But they did not body shame me, thankfully, which is something I cannot say for my co-hosts here today. All right, and on to the news presented by Dash Hudson.
In the ever-changing world of social media marketing, staying up to date is crucial. Dash Hudson, the sponsor of today's episode, is a trusted platform used by brands like United Airlines, Procter & Gamble, and Rare Beauty that offers sophisticated insights and workflow tools designed to help you outsmart social. Today, we have an exciting offer for you. Access their highly anticipated social media trends report featured in Forbes and Business of Fashion. You can discover key trends such as the impact of creators on brand engagement and the 100% sales boost achievable with engaging TikTok content. To read the report and sign up for a free 14-day trial, head on over to dashhudson.com/podcast. That's dashhudson.com/podcast.
All right, first up in the main news this week, Ginny Marvin posted on X from her @adliaison handle the following. I didn't wear my glasses today. So, first-party data is increasingly important for marketers to optimize and measure campaign performance, but incorporating it can be cumbersome. Today, we're launching Google Ads Data Manager to help businesses manage and use their first-party data regardless of where it's stored. With Google Ads Data Manager, you'll be able to manage, analyze, and use consented first-party data from different sources in one place in a privacy-centric way. Goes on to talk about how it's a benefit for small businesses. And then she says, to start, Google Ads Data Manager will roll out in Google Ads to make it easier to use enhanced conversions and customer match, and will expand over the coming months and years. So that's the thread there. Google also announced this on their Ads and Commerce blog. They shared a screenshot of what it looks like. Looks pretty easy to use. They noted that the data manager does not change the way their products currently work. It just simplifies the way that you use them. There's minimal to no code knowledge required to use it. And they claim it's going to reduce your workload. But really, it just looks as simple as any other integration you might have set up in Google Ads. You just connect the product. There's a button for that. And it sounds like there's going to be a bunch of direct integrations available from various CRMs and CDPs, customer data platforms, if you don't know what that means. They noted Shopify, Salesforce, HubSpot, PipeDrive, and ActiveCampaign, just to name a few. They also said that the ability will be there to use Zapier to connect other data sources if they don't have a direct integration. So that's cool. And the post also said that Data Manager is rolling out and will become generally available in Google Ads in early 2024. So if you don't see it, that's why. And they noted that at that time, it'll simplify the enablement of enhanced conversions for leads as well as customer match for numerous partners. And next year, they're going to bring the solution to additional ads products. So I don't know how they're going to do that, if it's still going to be managed in Google Ads, but it sounds like this is just the first version of it and we'll see some changes to come. But if it doesn't change the way anything works other than making it easier to set up, I think that's great. Great news. Thank you, Ginny, for sharing. And honestly, the article didn't have too much fluff in it, Shep. So I was looking for a quote for you and I didn't really pull one. It was good. Mainly informational.
Yeah. I'm so happy for you.
I'm happy for you.
I like the thought of this, but I always just now in the back of my mind have a why is Google doing this kind of thing, like flair to it. So a bunch of the integrations at the beginning look good. There's obviously a lot of Google products like Merchant Center, things like that. But mm-hmm. Salesforce, HubSpot, Shopify, all those seem like they are going to be easy to disseminate information to. And then just because Google has this new data manager, is that the name of it?
Yeah.
You still like, you're giving all that information over to Google.
All I could think was like sale in quotes, right? It was California that called that exchange a sale.
Right.
That's all I could think about.
So,
Alistair McTaggart.
Yes.
If you've been listening for 300 episodes, you know.
Yeah, but like, is it going to integrate with Microsoft? There's some like DOJ stuff we're going to get to in a minute that, you know, might not be the most friendliest integrations out there. So, again, nice that you'll be able to pass it, though. I think overall, this looks good, but I always just have that shred of doubt now after seeing what's happening with the DOJ trial.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We have more news from Google Ads from Ginny Marvin, our ads liaison. She tweeted on October 10th announcing that demand gen campaigns are now out of beta and rolling out for all accounts. So starting October 10th, hopefully you have them live in your account by now. As a reminder, these run across YouTube, Discover, and Gmail, and they can appear as short form video or carousels. Google's trying to make this a big like social push. I wasn't on the episode when we made the original announcement about the beta, but I just have a lot of thoughts about how it's like the new version of Discovery, and Discovery campaigns feel so new, right?
Like, yeah, we barely played with it and now it's gone.
It's just all over the place. And then I'm also confused. Like, I just feel like they're trying to make PMax like everything for everyone, but then they're still working on this new ad type. And Mike Ryan agrees with me. He tweeted, "I'd love to see Google spell out in a little more detail the differences in overlaps in scope with PMax and the expectations advertisers can have of each ongoing campaign type to the other. Like, how do these specifically complement each other?" I'm still very confused about that. And Greg, you've used demand gen a little bit here and there, right?
Yeah, it's just not working great. Because demand gen is supposed to be the discovery replacement. Mm-hmm. And then PMax at some point will likely be a DSA replacement, but you can upgrade your DSAs to PMax right now, but they're not DSAs. It's a strange hybrid. And then the ad formats on demand gen are just, I thought that they were going to be more dynamic, I guess. You can have like a carousel image ad, which is really cool. You can have an image ad and then a video ad. So it's like, that to me is one of the biggest differences with demand gen, is that the ad units are more, I guess, ad-y than just put in some assets and kind of PMax does the rest.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's weird with demand gen is it's the only Google campaign where you can set location targeting at the ad group level, which sort of breaks your brain to think about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Why?
Which is just goofy.
That's strange.
Some updates that have been added to demand gen since originally launching the beta that you might not be aware of. They say they added placements within YouTube Shorts, so those video assets you were talking about. Max clicks bidding, if you want to go crazy with that. They also have conversion and conversion value bidding, lookalike segments for prospecting, ad previews. Wow, thanks. And A/B testing. Ginny also said this week that merchants can add product feeds. And another big part of this announcement is that starting this week through early 2024, existing discovery campaigns will be migrated to demand gen campaigns. I don't know exactly how that's going to look, but everyone should be aware that that's
migrated,
happening.
Not upgraded.
Interesting. They said migrated. That was a copy paste. Okay. They usually say upgraded.
And one other goofy thing with demand gen, just if you're in the e-commerce space, you cannot, unless you have a certain number of conversions, and I thought it was like a wildly high number that have to come from this demand gen campaign. I thought it was like 100. I forget exactly what my rep said. Don't hold me to this. But unless you have those conversions, you can't use any like target return on ad spend or max conversion value. You have to let that learn up to a very high threshold in order to turn that on, which is tough if you're a retailer that sells like a wide variety or products with a huge discrepancy in price.
Yeah. And it just makes me annoyed because the name demand gen just made me think when I first heard it that it might be something for B2B, and it never
is.
It's never, ever.
No. It's not for, if you do demand gen, you should not use demand gen campaigns.
It really is like, it is just very discover. I feel like they just should have kept the name and changed what you could do.
Why?
With it.
Yeah. And then stupidly, I'm like, I can set up a shopping campaign brand new and do target return on ad spend, brand new campaign. But demand gen needs, let's say it's 30, not 100. You need 30 conversions to do this. Why is this happening? It has to be trained differently, I guess. It doesn't make any sense to me that you could be like, oh, this one, you could just fire right up from the gate. Not that you should do that, but fire it up is like max conversion value. And then demand gen, you can't use max conversion value. That's just strange.
Yeah. There's always something they're not telling us. Mm-hmm. Couple fun things from the actual blog post announcement from this. There were some celeb appearances from PPC chat of people speaking the praises of demand gen. So there were like little X posts from Melissa Mackey, Manah Hamani, Gil Gildner, Sam Tomlinson. So that was fun. And just proves that they are looking at PPC chat and they do hear our complaints. And
PPC Greg was on there too.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, the only Greg on the list.
Well, yeah, you weren't on there. No. Missing. Also from PPC Greg, he tweeted the article with a screenshot and said, pro tip, if you're going to make a fake stat chart, make sure the math is correct. So there's a fake screen grab in the article of a demand gen campaign and you can like look at the results. So it says they spent $600 and had 300 conversions and the CPA is $15, and also the impressions don't add up when you're looking at the different ad
types.
No, they
said they got 3,000 conversions.
Oh, did
they spent $600. The conversion cost was $15, and that somehow they got 3,000.
Yeah, isn't that like 2 cents? Like, whose account is that?
Opposite
like,
way. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Five cents.
I
would like to advertise for whatever business is getting these 2 cent CPAs. Anyway, yeah, just check your math. Clearly, I didn't.
Two cents.
2 cents, yeah. Okay.
You were right. I did the math wrong.
We're going to do a recap of everything that's happened in the DOJ versus Google antitrust lawsuit. There's a lot that's happened here. If you recall, we put out some shirts that you can buy, shop.marketingclock.com, if you like to shake the cushions, as we talked about in weeks prior. And there was sort of a lot going on this week. If you're not into PPC, you can skip past this. I'm going to kind of go along and try to explain it to the best of my ability here. But there was an article on Yahoo Finance talking back about Jerry Dischler and saying that they would look to shake the cushions with releases and launches and adjust those thresholds to 5% up, to 10% up, to 15% up. And that's where that shaking the cushions kind of started. And then Jason Kint at Jason_Kint on X has been a great resource if you're looking for more information. And over the last week, he had a few tweet X's saying, again, we learned during testimony about Google's auction pricing mechanisms, which according to evidence are specifically designed to extract value from advertisers. Not controversial, but a baseline reminder that Google plays an active role, has market power, and is conflicted. Those in the industry are very familiar with Google term ad rank, but it has a different name, LTV, inside Google, as in long-term value. And it seeks to predict whether or not the benefits of shopping a particular ad exceeds the cost, according to Exhibis. So for a long time, ad rank was basically a quality score times your bid. I don't really talk about ad rank anymore. We still have quality score. It doesn't really mean anything. And then we have other scores, like asset scores, that don't really mean anything either. But inside of Google, there's something called LTV that is used in conjunction with a bid to try to figure out what to show. So that's internal, and that's the long-term value. They had Dr. Adam Judah of Google, the VP of Product Management, on the stand. And apparently, according to Jason Kint, who was there, he says, in terms of what means long, Judah mostly defined it as status quo. And in terms of value, he defines it broadly and not just for profit for Google. Says Jason. The basic vanilla, quote unquote, Google's words, formula is LTV equals your max bid times the perceived click-through rate or predicted click-through rate minus the beta. So a couple things there. We'll have some charts up in a minute. And Jason goes on to say, folks in the industry also know term quality score, a 1 to 10 value shared with the client. Google actually has a more complex internal metric that includes CQ, creative quality, and LQ, landing page quality. Importantly, these are not shared with clients and impact pricing.
It's just so nice to hear this, like, said that nobody knows what these things mean and they try to act like we're supposed to know what they mean.
Those would be helpful things to know. Yes. Also, by the way, I would love to know if it's my ad or my landing page that I could improve, if not both. Just tell me.
Yep. So again, we've been fed a lot of things, and it does not seem like these things are what is impacting in the back end, and there's more to come here. According to Jason, the testimony goes on to say, how does ad quality impact pricing? According to the exhibit, in two ways. There's incidental pricing. Ad quality affects launches affect the cost per click and the cost per acquisition, and then intentional pricing. So this is where it gets interesting. Intentional pricing is that Google can tune prices using mainly format prices, squishing, and reserves. And I don't know if he meant squishing. I think he meant squashing in there, but we'll get to that in a second. Okay, so the biggest contention with the Department of Justice and Google is that Google, according to the DOJ, Google has the power to affect ad pricing directly. And I'm going to read this just because I think this is interesting. The DOJ then offered, and this is from another account, and you can get the links over at newsletter at Marketing Clock or community.marketingclock.com. The DOJ then offered an internal document authored by Judah's ads team, which read, we directly affect pricing through tunings of our auction mechanisms. After multiple instances of sparring with DOJ's Dahlquist over semantics, Judah admitted that it could be possible, quote unquote, that Google can directly affect advertisers' costs through tuning or adjusting the cost of different types of clicks or impressions. So Google can tune those up or down. There was another lengthy exchange talking about the randomized generalized second price auction for search ads, which is still running today. And in this case, instead of the highest bidder winning an auction, the RGSP introduced the possibility of randomly switching the first and second place ads in auction if the long-term values, remember that's a Google calculation, are close enough. And then advertisers can change your long-term values in two ways. One, increasing their quality. And that's, again, according to this account, it's a concept that Google blurs in communications with advertisers, or more simply, increasing their bids.
So Google says they blurred it?
No, this is an account. If there's a quote, I'll say quote.
Well, Google did blur it.
I agree.
Also, random? I don't think it's random. They said it wasn't. Random.
Okay, so there was an additional testimony that advertisers would have to raise their bid 3.7 times higher to avoid the possibility of a swap in an RGSP auction. So it does seem like the LTV plays a very high role, because your bid would have to be 3.7x to basically bypass RGSP, which is a big multiplier. So Judah stated in one document that was unveiled that, if I have to say we randomly disable you if you don't bid high enough, then I'm going to have another bad year at Google Marketing Next, winky face, which people are saying there's a lot of discussion about the winking emoji, I guess, in court. So whatever. And then in another document, Judah had sent his supervisor advocating for his own promotion. He referred to himself as a keeper of many skeletons within ads. One of those skeletons included his advocacy against a 2019 proposal called Incognito, which would have increased privacy within Google search that led to a level that would nearly match DuckDuckGo and collect significantly less data from users. In his successful argument against Incognito, which was never adopted, Judah warned that adoption would lose Google multiple billions of dollars in ad revenue. Not looking good so far here. And then when they were talking about that tuning, it came to light that Judah finally, and this is, I'm reading this here, Judah finally admitted that in terms of changes that affected Google's ad prices, quote, the ups were greater than the downs, as everybody could have decided. And so there was some evidence that was released that was flabbergasting, I guess. We all knew this happened, but I just think that the tact wasn't really there internally. One of the PowerPoints has a man opening his shirt, and instead of the Superman sign, it is a dollar sign.
It's so crazy.
And it's called Adventures in Pricing.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
And there's an auction recap, and they said, we run a generalized second price auction. They talk about the LTV, how they pick the top to show in that position. We move, repeat until we run out of candidates, all that basic stuff. They call long-term value that they were talking about the basic quote-unquote vanilla flavor. And again, there's a formula up on screen as to how LTV is created. And at first glance, you're like, this makes some sense, right? You're saying this is going to be a better ad for a user. If you're going to use this metric and multiply it times the bid, I'm okay with that. Like, if there's a formula saying your LTV is this, let's say it's your quality score, ad rank, whatever, that makes sense to me. That's like a scientific fact that you can say, this is the case. I'm now going to multiply by the bid, and then we're going to see who's better because you want better experience. So I think this is all great, right? Like, this makes sense. It'd be good to know this stuff, but it's fine. And so the way the second pricing works is that there's the LTV that's calculated based off the bid and the ECPM and the CPM cost and all that. And you have the winner of the auction and then the runner-up. And that's based off of the long-term value of the winner and the long-term value of the runner-up. So that long-term value is calculated and the winner pays a cent more than second, that the runner-up, essentially. So you're saying, well, this is what we think this should cost, and you're going to pay 1 cent more than that. So again, I think that's fine. That makes sense to me. And then they talk about the reserve pricing and how they set the reserve so that if the LTV does not hit the reserve, it will not show. So then is where it gets dicey. There's a slide that talks about auction pricing mechanisms. And this is an internal Google document. They say, what are auction pricing mechanisms designed to do? Specifically designed to extract value from advertisers. Not to advertisers. Yep.
Mm-hmm. From.
From advertisers. It's designed to minimize efficiency loss, so click loss and making money. And it's also designed to minimize an adverse response from advertisers. So
joke's on you.
With pricing mechanisms, they're trying to get more value, keep people happy, and make more money, basically, is kind of what I'm distilling it down to. They're also saying it's not designed to increase clicks. And more importantly, it is not designed to focus on the user. So they're not trying to get value to the advertiser, and they're not focusing on the user. And again, these are the pricing mechanisms they're going to be talking about. And they say the vanilla pricing may not be sufficient when there's weak or lack of auction pressure. So if that runner-up is a really low bid or going to cost really low, then the vanilla pricing might not be sufficient. And if the reserve is low, then the vanilla pricing might not be sufficient. So in the slide, they say, we need a way to extract value more directly. We need pricing mechanisms with pricing knobs.
Just turn it up to 11.
Let's go. All right. So they're not shaking cushions with this. They're knobbing it up.
Turning knobs.
Okay. And this is where that squashing comes in, or squishing from Jason Kent. I think he meant squashing. So there's now a slide talking about squashing and how it works. And instead of using that LTV metric that was calculated, they say they can compress the dynamic range of predicted click-through rates in a given auction. And it's achieved by moving all candidate predictive click-through rates in the direction of the max predictive click-through rate in that auction. And that effectively simulates auction pressure. So instead of using the LTV that was calculated for everybody, they're now putting a multiplier in there to effectively simulate auction pressure that wasn't there. So they're now bypassing LTV. They're squashing things by including multipliers, again, to move in the direction, saying it's going to move towards having a better click-through rate because they are squashing these together. And so what will happen is if the LTV of a given click would be $5 and let's say that's the runner-up. You know, traditionally you'd pay $5.01. Mm-hmm. But now the LTV is going to be multiplied by the squashing metric that is going to move towards a higher perceived click-through rate or whatever the P is in that. I already forgot. So then we could say maybe that runner-up now is simulated auction pressure. It's moving up and maybe it's now $7. So now the winner doesn't pay $5.01, they pay $7.01 because there's this simulated auction pressure. And this is where I take umbrage with everything, mm-hmm. because everything makes sense up until the fact that you are moving all candidate perceived click-through rates in the direction of the max perceived click-through rate. And that is clearly something that is made to what they say, mm-hmm. simulates auction pressure. And then they have an example of what it looks like, and they've got the Mogwai version of the Gremlin, where it essentially improves the auction pressure increase, and they show what the squashing does and how Google will make more money off of that because there's more auction pressure. And then they find something that basically will worsen the auction pressure. And they've got the actual Gremlin when it gets wet in there in this slide. And they say it's going to reduce because there is already auction pressure here. So you might think, well, hey, Google, maybe this is a bad idea, uh-huh. right? Like this is probably not a good idea. So I'm going to introduce another slide here called fine-grained squashing in the slides here. And what fine-grained squashing does is, according to the slides here, they say, now that we know efficiency loss is a natural outcome of any pricing mechanism, how do we go about minimizing it? Can we identify in a robust way pockets of auctions that are more or less susceptible to efficiency loss? And how can we turn down the pricing knobs for auctions that are more susceptible and turn up the pricing knob for auctions that are less susceptible. And there's the ancient alien guy saying, is such a thing even possible? And then the next slide is, yes, it is. And this is where they show how you can combat efficiency loss by using Q-space squishing, aka fine-grained squishing, and they look
squashing.
At squashing. Sorry, I took Jason's words. And it shows that there are clusters of queries that they can implement the fine-tuned squashing at that level so that there is efficiency loss. There is no efficiency loss if they would implement it, but if there would be efficiency loss, they wouldn't implement it, essentially. So that is like a deep dive into how much they are impacting the prices that we pay. They are not just using the squashing method. They're using fine grain squashing on certain clusters, queries, to make it likely more favorable. It doesn't say that in the slide, but I'm saying this person is full of memes and they think they're cool and they think they solved it here. So that's what we're up against. It's like there's not just squash. There's not just making the LTV. They're now squashing it and then they're fine grain squashing the LTV.
Thank goodness it's squash season.
And I have a fear that, like, Microsoft copies everything they do and that they're, like, taking notes from these slides.
Except they probably, like...
already do
they
it.
They probably forgot a couple decimal points somewhere. Anyway. So then there was another slide, too. If you weren't sick already, there's a new release document called Tuning for Smarties from the Google internal team. And it says, ads quality. We're no dummies. And the first slide says, tuning in a nutshell. One, measure things. Two, do math. Three, profit, exclamation.
These are real
exclamation,
slides?
Exclamation, real slides.
First of all, no design, no memes, no points.
So then it goes on to say, what are we tuning again? Question mark. Prices! Exclamation mark. For every ad, we set a price. If the price is below the bid, the ad can show. Tuning is just adjusting the ranking and pricing. Don't you want to vomit when you see
this?
You know
this stuff happens, but I really hoped it was like two people at the top and not like a slideshow that probably a lot of people saw. You know what I mean?
Arena like, full of people looking at these stupid, ugly slides being like, yeah.
This is so sad.
I that's what I said. My initial reaction is sad. I knew like this is, it's just a mountain of sadness.
And then it's not like Google cares about these guys who made this slideshow. Like they're doing layoffs all the time. Like,
yeah. But anyway, it goes in, the next slide says, the long-term value function, and again, we learned about this, it's LTV, and it says, tuning equals adjusting the cost of different types of clicks and impressions. So, I just had a field day reading this stuff, and hopefully it's helpful to know, you know, you feel like these platforms are against you sometimes, and it's just nice to see that you're not a crazy person.
Yeah, because they are.
For about 295 episodes, people thought I was a crazy human being. The people thought I was nuts. And then on 1010, the other terms came to fruition here. There was somebody from JP Morgan Chase, and they were on the stand. And the Department of Justice had asked her about how Google changed the amount of information it provided in the paid search performance reports to JP Morgan Chase. And Lim was her name, explained that her team would use these reports to inform the performance of keywords. For instance, the reports allowed her team to easily identify which keywords produced the most value.
Yep.
And at first, only 5% of keyword performance was not visible to JP Morgan Chase. Over the years, however, that changed to 20% of keywords not being visible. Lim described that 20% as representing a bundle of smaller performance details of certain keywords. And Lim said that this served as a blind spot and that Google was essentially giving JP Morgan Chase less and less information over time, which undermined the firm's advertising strategies. When asked if that change made JP Morgan Chase's ad operations less efficient, Lim replied, potentially, but that she and her team could never know for sure.
You couldn't. You don't have the data.
How could you know? Okay, and then finally wrapping up here, I think Google actually has actual problems with this one. A lot of it is just showing that you're a rat company and you're just squashing and tuning and turning knobs, trying to shake every cent out of the cushions. But I think this part is an actual problem. So Google has SA360. It came to light that it is 76% of any type of like bid management tool product or ad management tool product. Google has that market cornered. But this is where I think there's a problem. So Amit Varida, who previously served as the director of product management for SA360 at Google, had some testimony from another member of Google. And it was about denying Microsoft's parity on SA360 by refusing to build Bing's auction time bidding feature. The states offered email evidence showing that Varia had believed that Bing's auction time bidding feature would enter the testing phase in the first half of 2020, but that didn't happen. And while Google's counsel argued that both Varia and Kruger's testimony that the testing was delayed due to a lack of resources within Google to prioritize the feature, the states pointed to a 2020 email in which Google and Varia, or which Kruger and Varia discussed how to justify the cancellation to Microsoft, in which resource constraints were not mentioned. So if you've got a tool and you're trying to say that we are, you know, we're like neutral, but then one of the advertisers is looking to have something built out and you are saying we are not building it out, we're trying to justify not making this, that to me is monopoly, right? Like that's antitrust. You're saying, I've got this tool that everybody can use, 76% of people use it, we're going to deliver this to Microsoft and we don't. Like to me, that is damning evidence mm-hmm. of some shenanigans, right? Like again, I'm not a legal person here, but that seems like one is highly damning, I would say. And then there was also some more testimony that 85 to 90% of the dollars expended through the SA360 flowed to Google Ads. So again, not implementing Microsoft features, saying you'll do it, trying to justify not doing it. When you have the most popular tool, I think something will come down from that.
Now it's time for this week's Take of the Week. This is a hashtag fire digital marketing take with extra spice served up for you. We simply deliver the take for your consumption. We give no opinions. We don't influence. You make the call.
This week's Take of the Week comes from Mark Williams Cook at Mark Candor on X. Mark says, PPC management in 2023 is more about protecting clients from Google than outmaneuvering competitors.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so sad.
And Samara Hart at PixSim on X had another good comment, and she's a great follow to PIXSYM on X. She says, okay, maybe not always, but it's been my perspective that for over 13 plus years of managing Google Ads, the ratio of protecting clients to outmaneuvering met critical mass a few years back when they really started stripping us of data, making AI-generated recommendations, et cetera. So great take, Mark.
Now it's time for this week's ICYMI.
ICYMI, people, this is something you just might not have seen. Maybe something that you overlooked, but you shouldn't have. ICYMI, people, Colin Slattery has a pie chart that is not appetizing at all. It is titled Match Types Are Meaningless. So this looks at 1,500 keyword queries, and 731 of them were for exact match close variant. 744 of them were for phrase match close variant. So that makes up 47% and then 48% of the chart. And then these tiny little slivers, actual exact match, were two.
Two out of 1,546 queries
yep.
that occurred.
And then actual phrase match were 69. So that's 4%. And then less than 1% for actual exact. And this is, again, not surprising and really, really sad. Colin's caption made it even better. He said, it's wild how Google has obliterated the meaning of a keyword match type. Google has been loosening it for years and now has completely lost all meaning. Everything is broad match and broad match is no match. Weemp womp. So sad.
And a big thank you to Dash Hudson for sponsoring today's episode. Are you a social media manager feeling the constant pressure of navigating the ever-changing social media landscape? Today's modern marketers need access to the latest insights and best practices to stay nimble and drive success. And that's where Dash Hudson's Social Media Trends Report comes in. Trusted by thousands of brands like United Airlines, Rare Beauty, and Procter & Gamble, Dash Hudson is a social media management platform that delivers sophisticated insights and workflow tools, keeping you in the know and saving you time so that you and your team can get back to, well, marketing. Today, we have an exciting offer for our listeners. Dash Hudson is granting you exclusive access to their highly anticipated Social Media Trends Report. As featured in publications such as Forbes and Business of Fashion, this free report unveils the social media industry's leading trends and insights, such as the remarkable impact of creators on brand engagement and the incredible 100% sales boost that engaging content on TikTok can achieve. To read the report and sign up for a free 14-day trial, head on over to dashhudson.com/podcast. That's dashhudson.com/podcast. Big thank you to Dash Hudson, dashhudson.com/podcast.
Now it's time for this week's
Pew Pew
Lightning Round. At this point in the show, we split up our content into three parts: paid, organic, and social.
First up in the paid universe this week, if you were like me looking at some accounts on Wednesday, October 11th, wondering what's going on, they're not spending very much. Barry Schwartz has got us covered. He has an article called Google Ads Serving and Spending Bugs Impacting Many Advertisers. So basically, there's something happening in Google Ads. We've seen it in a couple of our client accounts. Google has not given us an answer as to whether it's fixed or not yet. Hopefully we'll have one soon and it'll be fixed.
And that's today when we're recording, so this is fresh.
Yeah.
There might be a resolution by the time this is out.
And I'm just mad, so I'm going to talk about this now and have to find a new working hard, hardly working later. But the fact that I had to actually like message Greg in a panic attack, like what's going on? Do we need to uninstall ClickCease? And then he Googled it and there was something going on.
I knew it was happening. I for some reason, I was making notes for the show and I just didn't put two and two together because you came at me with one thought and yeah.
How about a notification in the platform that says there's a known bug if you're acknowledging it?
That would be nice.
That would be really nice. Mm-hmm. X appears to have a new ad format that cannot be blocked or reported and there's no ad label. These are like truly wild times that we're
living
in.
These are the best ads to run. Just run them. So, no consequences.
We heard about this from Search Engine Land, and there is a tweet in here from an account called I Hate My Favorite Teams. Good luck to you. You can follow them in our newsletter or on marketingclock.com for all the links. And it says, this is new, a Twitter ad without an account attached that I can't block or interact with. Glitch or trial balloon? I mean, I hope it's a glitch.
There's nothing you can do. So these are not the best ads to run. You can't click this. Yeah, you can't. This can't be.
What's the point? Yeah.
You can't click it. What do you do? Make the image bigger?
This isn't useful to anyone.
No.
Forget that, though. As a user, there's nothing I can do here.
As an advertiser, there's nothing I can do here. As a user, I'd like a little sponsored label. Mm-hmm. Okay, more sad news, you guys. Let's do a little check-in on the search term report here, shall we?
Oh, okay.
First from Joe at the Joe Schmo on Twitter. $322 click. Google Ads matched the search Gallardo Abogados, which I'm assuming is a lawyer. I don't know. And I'm sorry I butchered your name. I'm not cultured. To my keyword, accident injury lawyer. My settings are English only. This firm is in Florida. My client is nowhere close. Horrific. Will appeal. And it shows one click. How sad.
For $322 matched to accident injury lawyer. The DOJ should be on this.
I can't believe they showed us the search term.
And again, it's phrase match. It's called phrase match, which used to mean the phrase had to be in there.
Those were my favorite days.
And people that are inexperienced will never know that. And they still call exact match, and people starting up on the platform are going to burn through all their money and be done with Google Ads forever.
Next up from Sean Ellie at SLE2134 on X, he says, this might be a new record for me, seeing one conversion out of 28 and seeing 16% of total spend. So for the search terms in this campaign, he only sees the search term for one conversion out of 28 of them and 16% of the total spend. When do we start getting to see the BS privacy part of the internal memos and docs?
I want the PowerPoint on that.
Yes.
I want the memes.
That is incredible. The spend was roughly $300 and you can only see search terms for the spend was $3,000. You can only see search terms for about $476 worth of terms, you can only see one conversion, and 27 conversions are hidden.
Show me those 27 because I'll give you more money. Hide the other Seriously. Stuff that you don't want me to see, but why wouldn't you be stupid or be smart in being stupid and show me the stuff that I would spend more on?
Here's a little update from Ben Goldman at BenGoldman33 on X. He tweeted asking, our at ads liaison, has something changed with the keyword planner? In the past, we would be able to see metrics associated with each keyword, including spend, when looking at forecasts. But now I'm only seeing the estimates by location. Curious why this has changed, or is it a bug? And Jenny responded and said, few advertisers were using individual and ad group keyword forecasting and keyword planner. So as of this summer, we're no longer maintaining these forecasts in our system. Campaign level forecasts and historical keyword level data is still available. How do you even have time when you're like squashing so many things to like take so many things away? I don't understand.
If you don't laugh, you just have to cry. And this is our 300th episode, so I'm going to laugh. Because this is...
We cried for $2.99.
Yeah,
we're here to laugh.
For 299 weeks. Next up here, Microsoft Advertising released the ultimate advertising playbook for holiday 2023. I'm kind of feeling this, you guys, this article is truly nothing.
Like, oh, I love it. Do tell.
These were the bullet points. Starting early is key.
It's too late to start early.
You missed that, Microsoft.
I was waiting in line for a flu shot surrounded by Santa Clauses. It's too late to start early.
If you're looking for another way to say starting early is key, you could use bullet point number two, which is holiday conversions will come from October clicks.
We're halfway through.
An average of 67% of November purchases and 50% of December purchases were directly attributed to customer clicks in October. Consumer clicks in October.
Is the third bullet point build a time machine?
It's already too late. The third bullet point is deal seeking is the new shopping fever. Over two-thirds of U.S. shoppers are spending the most time looking for coupons and deals. Was this written by AI?
Yes, it was.
For sure.
Fourth bullet, diversifying your ad strategy pays off. Specifically, they're talking about device targeting. Like what? Like we're talking about e-commerce. Like
that's not
they're all using mobile.
Strategy. You should be on computers and phones.
I'm concerned. Okay, finally, some light here. Anthony Hickman is still tweeting.
Hickman! Did you see the name of that marketing playbook too?
Yes, the ultimate advertising playbook for holiday 2023.
Oh, I just saw it in the link, which I added to the story. It says, download your festive season marketing playbook.
No, they should have used that in the title. The title was the most boring thing I've ever heard. For holiday 2023.
I have a wild idea. Can we run ads on tablets?
Diversify. Love it. All right. What does Hickman have to say?
Big changes to Google local service ads. Finally, something for like the small biz. Wow. Okay. You can now send message leads to a specific phone number with text message. So when you're in your settings, instead of just selecting email, you could select a phone number, text message, and send it to any phone number. That's awesome. This solves a big problem for clients who don't frequently log into a Gmail account. Good stuff. Thanks, Anthony.
Diversifying.
I'm going to hold Anthony perfectly, personally responsible for that change. Thank you, Anthony. Okay, this is funny. People are using community notes, which were formerly called Birdwatch, I guess, on X to kind of roast advertisers on Twitter.
Can't roast that one that we don't know.
If you're not familiar with this, because this is not the social lightning round, community notes, quote, aim to create a better informed world by empowering people on X to collaboratively add context to potentially misleading posts.
Thank you, Shep. That's important for later.
I was copy paste. So in the example in this article, it's Uber. And the ad says, when you drive with Uber, you're the boss. #Uber, #, earn like a boss. And then the readers added context under the tweet, the sponsored tweet. Uber advertisers, quote, earn like a boss. However, in reality, Uber driver compensation averages $11.77 per hour.
That's more than some of us small business owners makes.
I know.
So, yeah.
So this article is only mentioning big wigs being roasted on Twitter, like Apple, Samsung. But I guess just be careful about out there if you're running ads on X. There might not be a sponsor label. You might not be able to click it and people could reply with
I legit think this is hysterical that you're going to be like, I'm going to give you my money just so I can get roasted. It's also, if he lets this go, like, more people should use X.
It you is get fun. Real
things
yeah.
on ads.
Look at the joy. Yeah.
Right? Like, you yeah. get real feedback on ads, but why would anybody want to advertise on X with this? Again, I don't think he cares about ads.
The good marketers, if you're advertising a legit product.
Okay, and over in the organic section this week, we have another broad core update. Drumroll, please. October 2023 broad core update. Love the name of this update.
So inspired.
Fantastic. It's the third core update of 2023. It's expected to take about 2 weeks to complete. And the thing that I think is tough, this came out on the 5th. On October 4th, Google unleashed the October 2023 spam update, right? And this was right on the heels of September 14th's helpful content update. So we've got update hysteria here. And we'll see a little bit more in 2 weeks what's going on. But if you care about your rankings and traffic from organic Google, check it out. See how you're doing with it. Okay, from Danny Sullivan on his at search liaison handle on X, he says, there's an ongoing issue that's delaying the indexing of newly published content. This was on October 5th as well. So you have one more wrench to throw in there if you saw a traffic drop. He says, we're working on identifying the root cause. You can monitor progress here. And then that was fixed later in that day. So that was only an October 5th issue, I believe. Okay, from Jason Kint at Jason_Kint on X. He says, wow, Californians will now be able to one-click purge all of their data from all registered data brokers. And it's linking over to the new California Delete Act. It was signed by Governor Newsom into law. So it is apparently you will be able to purge all of your info if it's stored by a data broker. So just something to be aware of for Californians. Okay, we talked about this quickly, that Google Assistant and Bard is coming within a few months to iOS and Android. And Glenn Gabe talks about it. Again, when Glenn Gabe speaks, we listen. All right, and Glenn says, I can't emphasize enough how important a move this is for Google. In my post all about the code red that triggered thousands of code reds at publishers, I mentioned where this is all headed AI-wise. It's like a Jarvis-like assistant. And this is exactly where Assistant with Bard is moving. So there is a great post that you can read over on gsqi.com if you wanted to see about those code reds and where this might all fit into place is really that kind of all-inclusive assistant that can do everything. So great call by Glenn initially and, you know, seeing it here at least announced to the masses. All right, and keeping it Glenn Gabe, Glenn says the battle continues. After sharing about VentureBeat being one of the first publishers to block Google Extend so that Bard and Vertex AI cannot train on their content, an SEO from Advanced Local explained they did too across a large number of sites and eager to see how this progresses. So we talked about it last week. If you use user agent Google Dash Extended and you disallow that bot, Google cannot use Bard and Vertex AI. That you also can block ChatGPT bot by user agent GPT bot. And then there's a whole bunch more you can block more, but people are starting to use it. And I'd say that Advanced Local is a pretty search forward company and they're doing this. I think a lot of publishers will do it because if you can't be trained on this local news, you can't have AI generating local news. And that seems like a very easy thing to do. Obviously, we got it wrong a few times with some of those examples about a month back. But if you're a publisher, you might want to block that. Okay, a little helpful content update here from Lily Ray. She says, looking at the biggest losers of the helpful content update is pretty revealing. This site, which lost 70%+ of its traffic, tries to target all the keywords with listicle articles that round up Pinterest images without any attribution, plus 2 to 3 sentences each as its primary content strategy. And then goes on to say, As a heavily tattooed person, not only is the tattoo content vague and unhelpful, it's actually upsetting to read. These articles pull pictures of tattoos without mentioning the artist or where the images came from, and are, of course, making money off the ads. Not fair to artists. And this is what a helpful content update should do. If you get somewhere and you like the art and you can't find the artist, that is not helpful.
It's not helpful. It's unhelpful.
So you love to see it. And we've got a little Discover roundup here this week. Authorship is dead. Long live authorship. According to Glenn Gabe, he spotted a new option to get the latest on an author, it appears. And it's he saw it for Barry Schwartz, friend of the show. And you can tap on the link and get a fresh SERP entity with the knowledge panel for Barry, articles, carousel, and more. So somebody responded to Glenn saying, I'm going to keep my eyes open for it. Any idea what triggers them? And Glenn says, entities that Google can figure out is tied to the source of their article in the feed. I've seen those tags for some time, but that was the first time I've seen an author surface, which led to their knowledge panel, article carousel, etc. We're seeing more and more authors surface. All right, Glenn Gabe also found more Discover information where if you focus on news SEO, this could be beneficial to you. He says he uses Discover often, and it's the first time that he's seen Google News Showcase show up on his feed. The card explains that the article was selected for the Google News Showcase by the editors at the publication, which was interesting. So, and the example that he has and is up on screen, you can see that the story was selected for Google News Showcase by the editors at the New York Post. So I guess a little bit of a human element in there. Okay, and I hate this news. Barry Schwartz at Rusty Brick on X found a new design in the SERPs where Google is testing a line divider between the URL, the site name, the favicon, and the search snippets description. I think this looks horrific. I think things should be smushed together. Again, mm-hmm. There's lots of testing to try to figure out how you could get, make sure you're making a revenue. This makes things look very disjointed to me, at least. Looks like two different things. I hate it. Also from Glenn Gabe, there are new features for Google Vertex AI search platform for doctors. And he has a quote, it can cite and link to the original source of the info. This should help alleviate concerns that the AI might be hallucinating or generating inaccurate responses. And it's for Google Cloud. Reading the article, there are a couple things that kind of worried me on here where they said the healthcare industry is home to troves of valuable information and data, but it can be challenging for clinicians to find since it's often stored across multiple systems and formats. Google Cloud's new search tool will allow doctors to pull information from clinical notes, scan documents, and electronic health records so it can all be accessed in one place. So here's the scary part. For instance, if doctors want to know about a patient's history, they no longer need to read through their notes, faxes, and electronic health records separately. Instead, they can search questions such as, what medications has this patient taken in the last 12 months? And see the relevant information in one place.
No, thank you.
You might want to just flip through those notes a couple times, too.
That's why they have notes. Better yet, ask me. I'll tell you.
Just look, trying to make images and stuff with AI. A lot goes wrong. There's a lot wrong. A lot gets wrong.
We have seen it.
Gets a lot wrong. So maybe doctors? Ask your doctors if they're in the Vertex AI for this. Okay, and over to YouTube. They are testing community post feed on home and mobile. According to Google, they're saying that we've heard YouTube users are looking for more ways to find community posts from creators. So they're making a posts-only feed on the home tab on mobile devices. I guess it's not desktop, only mobile. And so you can view posts from channels you're engaged with in the past or what YouTube thinks you will like. I don't get the posts necessarily, but I guess if you're huge into YouTube, maybe it's for you. And apparently it's being tested on select Android and iOS smartphones. Okay, YouTube creators had another video released with a bunch of new updates. And I just got to say, they cannot get the quality right on this creators. I look at the creators and I'm like, wow. Like sometimes I feel bad about the quality of the show and like the video and stuff like that.
Our show?
Yeah. I think it's a little too light, some things like that. You look at this and this is like one of the first webcams. There's like 10 pixels in there, and then they put a little overlay for subscribers, and it looks like somehow they cut the S's out. Like the S's didn't cut right on the beginning and the end, and they pasted it in. It looks like it is a disaster.
We're doing okay here.
We're doing great.
We're doing awesome.
We should run that creator
program. We should do 300 more episodes.
So wait, the YouTube creators program doesn't have like a proper editing team? Like
no. No, and it's the video is always the audio's not good, the video's not good, but you know,
what?
I don't get
they're
it.
They're a video streaming.
They have a really good PowerPoint team at Google, and so that's where all the design resources went.
Contrast this to like a Liver King edited video on Instagram. He's like at the next level.
It's been a long time since I've seen that man and his family. How they doing?
He's not good.
Literally find one of your creators and hire them.
I know. This is awful. It's like it's atrocious.
Fine, reach out to Liver King.
I like this.
He's back on steroids. It's back raw. On the juice. No, it's bad. I hate it. Anyway, there are 24 more countries, and the YouTube partner program is expanding. You can now get into the partner program with 500 subscribers, 3 valid public uploads in 90 days, and either 3,000 valid public watch hours or 3 million valid public shorts views. So more people can make money off things like Super Thanks, Super Chat, Super Sticker, and channel memberships. There are also going to be some more advertiser-friendly guidelines, so they're going to allow ads on more controversial videos, so things like domestic abuse, as long as it's not too graphic, he says. You can have ads, abortion, things like that. You'll be able to monetize. And then they announced generative AI, and they called it AI Bloom. So if you do shorts and you are on the mobile app, you can turn your face into a bouquet of flowers.
Thank you.
That's all that you can do, but there's more AI and filters coming soon. But for now, you can use AI Bloom and turn yourself into some flowers.
Why did they start there?
I don't know. It's so stupid looking.
They should start with eliminating the background from these S's.
That's what I was just going to say.
All right. And from at YouTube Liaison on X, you can now add a related video to a short as part of the upload flow. We talked about this 3 weeks ago. You had to upload the video, then go back and add the related video. You now can do it when you upload at the same time. So that is helpful. And Google is now monetizing Looker Studio Pro for $9 a month, according to Thomas Issel at Thomas Issel on Twitter. And I'm going to be on a panel with him at SMX coming in November. It's free. Go register today. And their premium perks don't look like much, right? You can manage and protect Looker Studio with Google Cloud. You can share and collaborate with team workspaces, analyze faster with quick filters and personal report links. There's support, and then I don't know. A mobile app? Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not looking at reports on my mobile app.
I would just like it to be faster. That's what I want. Anyway, there's one more update on Looker, according to at Wissy and underscore analytics on X. Dimension control is a new control type, so you can now change the main dimension of a set of charts sharing the same scope along with a set of predefined fields from the same data source. And there's a graphic up there. But that's it in organic. What's happening in social, bud?
All right, we're long, so I am going to fly through. But first up, just FYI, Threads is still trying. A user on Threads at William Max spotted what looks like a trending topics feature that was leaked in the timeline. They said they're not like an app researcher or anything like that, but it looks like they follow a bunch of Meta engineers and somebody shared something by accident. So this may be coming. Just in time.
It's too late.
I mean, no one cares, right? That's why we started with it, because I know you're not listening.
Get ready for October clicks.
Just in time for the holidays, if you're still trying to get into things early, Instagram is planning to add some new stickers. They're not stupid ones either. Greg, they're working on a new app sticker to help businesses promote apps within stories. A secret, which sounds stupid but isn't. It'll display a secret message, presumably to folks that respond to the story with a message. So this could be a cool way to share a promo or hint at an exclusive drop. There's good uses for that. This one's stupid, but I love it. You can add a music pick. Well, they're testing this, working on it. You can add a music pick sticker to your stories. It will enable respondents to share their top tracks at the moment, which could be fun for our marketing a playlist. And speaking of the holidays, but a different one, spooky TikTok users can rejoice. They have announced some new AR effects for anyone that doesn't feel like trick-or-treating IRL. They're creepy. This one on the right looks like how I feel inside, so I might just download TikTok. It's good.
From social media today, TikTok is also adding more direct publishing options to its API to facilitate third-party posting. So in addition to being able to publish videos directly out to TikTok from some other platforms, creators will also be able to schedule said posts from platforms where they're managing social. So that's great. TikTok's just putting themselves out there, trying to make it easy for folks. Now we've got a whole bunch of X news. So from X News Daily, X will remove the interaction counts, which are likes and reposts, from the main timeline, leaving only view counts. You'll be able to see those numbers if you tap into the post. And the intent, according to a tweet from Elon Musk, is to improve readability and kind of get the junk out of there.
I hate that. Couldn't hate it more.
Really?
Yeah, I like seeing that there's like a ratio of likes to reposts or reposts to likes. I think that's helpful metrics. And a lot of people like something. Like, okay, this might be worth it.
Might be worth actually reading and engaging with.
Especially like with more longer threads and things like that. It's a quick way to vet without having to click through and tap through and all that.
That actually makes sense given your opinion on YouTube and removing the dislike button and all that.
I want to know what's good. I want to know what's bad. I don't want to learn how to fix a refrigerator if it's the wrong way.
That's fair. X Daily did. I mentioned YouTube because they said it kind of is how you have to click into a YouTube video to see certain engagement metrics. So that makes sense. But just on the engagement front, Andrea Conway, who is a designer for X, posted that the platform has plans to keep tweaking their approach to engagement. So not only how they display metrics, but how you actually engage with the post. She said they're doing more with or plan to do more with gestural interactions like double tapping and swiping. This to me just makes it feel like more of a media focused platform then, because those are some of the things that we do with like Instagram, for example, or like I said about YouTube. So they're shifting away from just text-based content, maybe going to be more media first. And we know that they're working on that because, speaking of, X is testing variable video upload quality options. So Elon tweeted that the lower resolution choices are for those uploading time-sensitive video via slow or expensive internet connection. So basically, they're going to let creators choose the quality at which they upload a video so that maybe, you know, you can get it there faster if you need to. Another post from X Daily that the change is now live. You can pin up to 10 lists and communities. So congratulations to you. A post on X from Aaron at Aaron P613. 612 was taken. X Premium will be broken up into three tiers. Premium Basic, which will have full ads. Premium Standard, which will have half ads. And Premium Plus with no ads. That's all we see from this post. There's no word on price. Maybe they'll try to undercut that $14 to $17 option that Meta tossed out last week for Facebook and Instagram.
Can you click on the ads?
If you know who they're from and you can perhaps take an action, that would be ideal. Maybe you have to pay to be able to engage with ads. What a racket. So thank you, Shep, for telling everyone what Community Notes is all about, because they posted something. They said thank you to the contributors who have been active over the last few days, helping to keep people on X informed. They shared some impact of the work that the community is doing to try and keep things factual and correct. They also announced that they are working on some things that will help contributors and people on X further. They're actively working on improved media matching to help automatically show notes on even more posts with matching videos and images. They've seen notifications that people who have liked, reposted, or replied to a post are then later receiving a note. They're scaling that up so people can get information even if it's added after the fact, which I love. And then they also noted that last week they rolled out a massive speed improvement to make notes appear faster, and they are working on further speed gains. So again, knowing that there's world events going on that are kind of sensitive, they're really pushing towards that, and I love to see it. But I love to see it in general because we are big Community Notes fans around here. And last but not least, a post on X from Glenn Schmelzi at Hey Glenn's. He says, say what you will about this platform's owner, but a publicly traded company would never post something like this. CC at Greg Finn. And he reposted a post from Elon Musk that said, worth going back and forth between the For You and Following tabs so you see both your explicit follows and algorithmic recommendations. Greg Finn, your thoughts?
I'm with Glenn. Like, so many things have algorithmic recommendations that you can only snooze, can't get out of. And he's saying, hey, try it. You might like it. Maybe don't like it. But you don't have to have it shoveled down your face. Like, I think everything he's doing, well, I think most of what he's doing is stupid. I take it back. But he does do some smart things, and still being able to actually have a following is critical for X.
Yeah. And he does keep people posted on what's going on, and there's a lot going on, a lot of changes being made. So yeah, check out your different versions of your feed, and then if you want to pay to not have ads in either one of them, power to you.
In the ever-changing world of social media marketing, staying up to date is crucial. Dash Hudson, today's sponsor, is a social media management platform trusted by thousands of leading brands like Rare Beauty and United Airlines that is designed to help you navigate the landscape with its sophisticated insights and workflow tools. Today, we're giving you access to Dash Hudson's highly anticipated social media trends report to unlock the trends, insights, and the best practices you need to outsmart social. To read the report and sign up for a free 14-day trial, head over to dashhudson.com/podcast. That's dashhudson.com/podcast for that report and free 14 days.
And that brings us to our real life segment. Straight out of our accounts and into your ear holes. It's time for Working Hard or Hardly Working, where we talk about what's going on in our IRL work, good, bad, or otherwise.
Just to reiterate what I was harping on before, it would be nice if there was a Google Ads bug of some sort to receive an email, or you're going to give me a notification in platform about my budget being too low. Perhaps you could tell me my ads aren't serving because of a bug.
The Google Ads status dashboard barely even works properly. Like, you're asking for too much.
What about you?
For us, we had Christine and I just call you Christine. I went in client mode.
Whoa.
I have to talk to clients. I'm like, Christine. And then I'm halfway through. I'm like, I'm going to call her Shep. Just
yeah.
So you know.
Nobody. I never call you Christine in front of anyone. No, I don't even know that that's your name.
I'm not bad.
Yeah, it's like confusing because I don't want to introduce myself to a new client and be like, hey, it's me, Shep. My maiden name was Shepherd. It's just a lot.
Yeah.
That's how I introduce but you, I was but in, it's different.
I was in client mode, and that's what I was saying. But we had a client where there was kind of these fake search engines that were running branded ads. We tried doing a bunch of trademark reviews. Google Ads stinks at trademarks now. It's a huge nightmare. And I had thought that initially that they were just kind of the – what is the name of the other search partners? I thought they were search partners we couldn't get out of or something. And it turns out it's AdSense. So I think it's Performance Max is running text ads and people are implementing it via AdSense on these spammy sites. So I would just say it's something that you should take a look at, right? And if you are looking at your branded terms and there are all these funky search engine, wannabe search engines, buying your branded term, taking it over and then running AdSense to make money off of it, just find those sites, put them in the placement exclusion list, and I've shut everything down so far.
Really?
Shut everything right down. So that's just a little tip there, but I think it's probably going to keep growing because obviously a lot of these ad types you have no control over.
What about you, Jess?
Working hard for me this week is just open discourse with clients. One of the things we pride ourselves on here is transparency and having good conversations with our clients, but we had a win this week. We have a client whose retainer touches multiple departments, and their data piece of their retainer had just been something where somebody that was there previously said, I want these metrics reported on every month. Let's talk about it. It's fine. All right, for the continuity editors out there, I just spilled my drink over absolutely everything because I was talking with my hands. So this is Shep's computer, but I'm going to finish what I had to say. So open discourse with a client. They were just getting some repetitive reporting that we were finding insights they weren't really doing much with. And we said, hey, can we use the hours for this portion of the retainer to do some smarter reporting that will help our PPC team do better for you? And now we're going to do that. So just communicating, I guess, the lesson there with clients or in-house if you're using resources that aren't really being spent in the best way, just have a conversation about it because you can always iterate and move forward and do better. And next time, I will keep my hands to myself. That is the end of Working Hard and Hardly Working. And now for this week's
Cool Tool.
As a reminder, our Cool Tool segment is not an official endorsement or paid mention. We're simply sharing something we found in our travels that may be of use to our listeners. And is really, really cool. This week's Cool Tool helps with making lists of keywords. And we heard about it from Thomas Excel at Thomas Excel on X. It is the Google Ads Add a Keyword Match Type Helper, a Chrome extension that helps you change search term match types without manually adding brackets or quotation marks while you're in the search term report. I have been dying for such functionality, so it's very handy. Thank you so much for pointing that out. As always, we will have the links in either newsletter.marketingclock.com or on Discord, community.marketingclock.com. So pick your poison, don't spill it on yourself, and check it out. Now it's time for our must-read marketing article of the week. An article so advanced, so in-depth, so detailed that we simply cannot cover it in its entirety on today's show.
This week's must-read marketing article of the week comes from Casey Markey over on Search Engine Land. And Casey has a article called How to Survive and Thrive in a Google Helpful Content World. Casey goes through 7 different things to consider if your website was impacted by Google's latest helpful content update, including 1, that ad companies are not your friend. 2, you always optimize for usability. 3, stop using interstitials and pop-ups incorrectly. 4, helpful content doesn't mean more content. 5, bloggers must support any and all health claims. 6, that you stop writing your copy just because you think it'll rank. And lastly, that you should niche down and elevate individual expertise. It's a fantastic article. Just make sure you know if it's the helpful content update, the October spam update, or the October 2023 update. But anyway, appreciate it. Thank you, Casey.
And now onto our playlist of curated songs to work to. You can head over to playlist.marketingclock.com to listen to Marketing a Playlist. Jess, but what you added to the playlist this week, that was terrible. From memory, Supernova Goes Pop by Power Man 5000. I will be going with Celebrate by the Jonas Brothers. Team Sophie, though. Greg?
I'm going to go with Mac Miller Weekend.
All right, that does it for today's show.
It is now officially not Marketing O'Clock.
Thanks for listening.
We miss you already.
We can't wait to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Marketing O'Clock. If you're looking for more information on today's topic, head over to marketingoclock.com/newsletter to receive every single article we cover. We share the news as it breaks in our Discord community. Head over to community.marketingoclock.com to join.
Welcome to this week's Shooting the Heck. We're after our famous Friday news show. We don't talk about marketing anymore. We just...
Shoot the heck.
I don't know what we're doing here.
Oh, this week we're playing everybody's favorite game. This game is where I have some ideas and y'all try to poke holes in these ideas. So it's called Poke Holes in This.
Never heard
these
of
ideas are not fully fleshed out, but they're usually pretty good.
Okay.
Okay. So I was watching a dog show with my kids. It was super fun. We're looking at all the dogs. Yeah, you know, like
the Westminster.
The competitions, okay. Right?
Like Paw Patrol.
Paw Patrol. My kids are 9.
Too old for that. My second option was Scooby-Doo.
No. My problem is I just don't have the chops to take like a Newfoundland versus one of those like mop dogs. And I don't understand how those dogs compete with like a skinless chihuahua or something. You know what I mean? And like, I want to see dog shows for every breed, but like the breed-based dog shows on there. So I could look at all the fluffy golden retrievers and be like, ooh, that's the most boopable. I hope that one wins. Because I can't compare those things together. I can't compare like a big jowly mastiff versus one of those little, you know, fluffy white dogs with the brown eye drizzle.
Are these looks-based competitions? I thought it was like a skills competition.
No. It's all breed-centric. Like which dog properly represents the breed the best. But there's so many different breeds. I don't know. I can't compare them.
I care less about animals than anyone here. And even I know that if you really care about animals, you don't like those dog shows.
That's true.
What are you talking about?
They should be for the rescues, the dogs that nobody wants, the down and trodden. That is the dog show I want to see.
That's a good idea, too. I think you have I have no holes to poke in your idea. Mm-hmm. But I can't judge these different breeds against their breed standards. It doesn't make any sense to me. They're all so different. I want to see the full breed for all the breeds, and you can choose.
I have more thoughts. Do you have any?
I mean, I align with you, and I was just going to have that be the whole to poke in Greg's idea, is that your idea is better.
I'm also pretty sure, isn't there like one of each dog type in the dog show? So I feel like there's like a golden retriever competition like the week before to pick the one golden retriever that's going to be on
out of this. A Dalmatian, those are not the same. That's apples to oranges, as we would say.
So you just want the winner of the Dalmatian competition to not have to go against like the pit bull.
I want the whole Dalmatian competition. I've never seen one in my life.
I think they must exist because that dog show always has all the different breeds.
Right, but I always see the breeds competing against each other and I cannot compare them.
So
my brain
doesn't
work.
Like, well, you're ESPN not the judge. 13 for dogs.
Yes.
Just so we can
all
see
dogs,
all the dog
all the
shows.
Time. I wanted the dog channel.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's just dog shows and you see what breed's on there. You watch that breed and you're like, oh, this is great.
You're welcome for improving your idea twice.
Thank you. Okay, next up. Another idea here. They're just judged on looks. Right? They're just
we're
looking
still
on the standards.
Are we still on the dogs?
They're just looking at the standards of this. Okay. So what I want is a more well-rounded talent show. They're like, here's the working class dogs. And like, here's the winner of the working class. No, I want to see you work. Right? No. You're supposed to go into like little what? Beaver holes or something. Send those dogs down beaver hole. See how many beavers you bring back.
Have you not seen these dog shows? They have like, they have to like jump over the little thing and like do a wiggle. They're always doing skills.
No, I want, they're like, here's the working class. Here's the friendly class. Here's the giant class. I like, no, they all have different like purposes. Like, I want the St. Bernard saving people.
Mm. I have a better one.
I want you to strap weights on a dummy and see who can pull the most, who can save the most.
Herding dogs, corralling
animals.
Yeah,
they should be the best breed.
Yeah. Maybe that, again, to Chef's point, is all happening in the background. Because you can't just bring a bunch of sheep
to
an arena.
No, I know that they are so manicured. No, I want to see, if you're in the working class, show me your dog working.
I think they should have a bunch of like mean people sitting eating spaghetti or something, and like whichever dog breaks their little heart and makes them share is the cutest.
So do you like my idea of having actual?
No.
You don't. I want it to be like a talent show, not just a look show.
I feel like that would be more fun to watch.
You're killing beavers? I mean,
they're fake beavers.
Well, you can eat them or something.
Oh, okay.
Beaver pelts? Is that a thing? I don't know.
It was.
Saying
like
words.
What's your next idea?
Okay, let's switch it up here a little bit. I feel like the judge has too much control. There's no scoring on there. Like, if you can go to Reddit r true rate me and see a full-on scoring system of how you score human faces, you can score dogs. It's just a subjective opinion from that
they're
judge.
They're holding up numbers, scores.
No, there's not. The guy just goes, or guy or gal just goes out in the middle and is like, it has a little snotty look on the face and it's like, give me the Bichon, the golden, boo-boo. And that's the order. And it's like, you just made that up. I want to know the scores. I want to see where you got docked points. I want science. I want data. I need more scores for this, not just your judge's opinion on that day.
But he's a judge.
I have no notes. I don't like dog shows.
I just feel like you got a problem with dog shows. You
that's
take it
when
up
I
with
take,
the AKC.
Yeah.
What? American Kennel Club?
That's when I take my Thanksgiving nap.
Okay. So you're not a dog show fan. So let's switch it up a little bit. All right. I think, honestly, half of the dog show is about dogs. And the other half of the dog show is about the handlers. If you look at them,
sure.
They have glittery shoes. They have all these dresses on. You have doofuses out there running in suits and shoes. You're like wearing nun bush shoes.
I have great
shoes.
Dog show shoes today.
You do. You would be perfect for a dog show. So here, it's too much about the handlers. They have their little outfits. It's too much. Half the people look like they have never run in their life and they're running there. What I think we should do, the handlers should have clothing attire, mandatory uniform, but one step further. It should be like real tree camo. I don't want to see them. I don't want to see the handler out there. I just want the dog. Put them all in the real tree camo. Nobody's going to be looking at the handler
or blue.
Anymore.
Isn't the thing blue? The area
or blue,
is blue,
whatever.
Blue
I just
screen.
I want them out. I don't want to look at the handler and their golden shoes and things like that. I want to look at the dog.
I had no idea you were so passionate about dog shows.
I don't think he is.
More than that, if that dog's really behaved, shouldn't you do like a random handler that's not the dog's real?
Ooh,
yeah.
See, you what? Are the
you
dog
are
show.
Good at this. You are not sleeping.
Wouldn't that be
your
funny
nap?
If
I'm
you had like mossy oak or something like that just covered just and you just don't see the handlers?
Then you look like that dog. Cheap dog with the thingies. Then they're going to get raided.
Do you
maybe
have any
that's
more?
Improvement.
No, I think we fixed it.
I think we did too. Can't wait for Thanksgiving. And all we'll right. See you next week.